Hi, everyone. Welcome to the debate on Press TV. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. On its National Defense Industry Day, Iran unveiled a large-range air defense system. Tehran boasts of developing its homegrown defense industry in the face of U.S. sanctions. President Hassan Rouhani says that while unveiling the new military accomplishment, the talks are useless with the United States at a time of rising tensions. Now, he stressed the situation will change only if Washington stops bullying and lifts the sanctions. Rouhani stressed security in the Persian Gulf will be impossible in the absence of Iran. Iranian top diplomat Zarif is also visiting Scandinavia, listening to proposals to save the JCPOA. We'll discuss those topics and more after a background report.
This air defense system somehow looks like the Russian S-300 missile system, but Iranian officials say it is more advanced than the Russian counterpart. It's called Bavar 373. Bavar is the Persian word for faith, and 373 is the sum of the Abjad letters for the word Muhammad, the name of the Prophet of Islam. The new defense equipment was unveiled on Thursday on the occasion of Iran's National Day of the Defense Industry, during a ceremony attended by Iran's President Hassan Rouhani.
This system is more powerful than the S-300 and is closer in function to the S-400. It's a very valuable achievement and a precious present offered by the Defense Ministry and the Armed Forces to our people.
This footage shot by the Defense Ministry shows the successful test firing of the Iranian homegrown missile system. Bavar 373 is a mobile surface-to-air missile system. It uses vertical launching system with square launchers, which can fire up to 6 missiles at the same time to hit a variety of air targets, from ballistic missiles to UAVs, within a range of 260 kilometers. The air defense system uses a long-range phased array fire control radar, dubbed Mirage 4, which can detect 300 air targets simultaneously. Iran says, given the recent security threats in the Persian Gulf, the country needs to strengthen its defense power while assuring its neighbors that its military might pursue solely defensive purposes.
We are stretching our hands of friendship to all legitimate governments to help foster peace and security in the world, and we believe the security deployment in the region can be replaced by cooperation. All our scientific and technological advances, including those made in the field of defense industry, are aimed at serving other nations and protecting peace and welfare in the entire region.
Bavar 373 was designed to match the Russian-made S-300. The production of the Iranian missile system began in 2010, after Russia refused to deliver the already purchased S-300 missile system to Iran due to international sanctions. Moscow returned to its commitments to deliver the S-300 missile system after Iran reached a nuclear agreement with the 6 major countries in 2016. After over 4 decades of arms embargo against the Islamic Republic, Iran says it is now able to fully secure its borders, only by relying on its domestic military equipment. For now, the country supplies plus 80% of its defense arsenal, including this advanced missile system, which Iranian officials say is another product of limitations imposed against Tehran. Yusuf Jalali, Press TV, Tehran.
Now, with that report, let me invite our guests who will be joining me in this debate. We'll have former U.S. Army Psychological Warfare Officer Scott Bennett from San Francisco, and Foreign Affairs and National Security Analyst Johanna LeBlanc from Washington, D.C. Good job, both of you. Now, let's go to San Francisco first. Scott, President Rouhani stressed on the National Defense Day that a U.S.'s so-called maximum pressure campaign has resulted in more advances on various fronts in Iran, including in the defense sector. Now, Iran is surrounded by U.S. bases scattered all over the Middle East region. Now, doesn't Iran have good reasons to stand on its own when it comes to manufacturing conventional weapons?
Well, I think any honest person, of course, would say a country has a right to defend its people and its culture and its infrastructure, and a feeling that it is being put in a defensive position because a war is about to be initiated against it, most likely next spring or summer before the 2020 elections, by Israel. And they are scrambling to assemble a U.S.-Israeli joint military alliance similar to the one that was formed in World War I, that started World War I, when the Grand Duke was killed by a Serbian extremist that caused the world to fall into war. And Lindsey Graham and the U.S. and Israel and Netanyahu are scrambling to form a similar alliance in preparation for an Israeli strike on Iran. So Iran has developed a fabulous multidimensional weapon system that can be fired off in ships and tankers and trucks and anywhere to defend itself from any military aggressors, whether it's from Qatar or U.S. Central Command or from Israel or anywhere else. But, you know, the saddest thing of the situation is that we're in this position in the first place. Donald Trump promised that he was going to be backing away from international war, and yet he's being victimized by John Bolton and Mike Pompeo and neocon liars, which have been feeding him propaganda, false and misleading information about Iran being a hostile force, when it is not a hostile force. It's not an enemy of the United States or the people. But the warmongers and the neoconservative Zionist warmongers are, because they are stopping people like me, for example, and Phil Giraldi and Mike Maloof and others from coming over to Iran or coming over to Lebanon and speaking at New Horizon conferences or others. They're threatening us as American citizens with arrests for 20 years if we go and speak and exercise our civil and constitutional rights. Mm-hmm. And that shows you America is falling into a police state of tyranny and madness. And I would lastly say that, you know, when Rouhani had said, or Zarif had said, America needs a serious mental recalibration, he was not saying that insultingly. He was saying that very accurately. America has destroyed its mental capacity, its families with divorce, its sexual schizophrenia with transgenderism and transvestitism and surgeries and every abomination under the sun the American culture and nation seems to be adopting. And I think that's facilitating a lot of the madness and hubris which is driving it to these international war operations, whether it's against Venezuela or Ukraine or Syria or now Iran or potentially even China. This is something that can only be countered by speaking directly to the American people and going around the politicians and saying, do you, the American people, realize that you are being victimized and lied to, that you are going to be suffering, your children are going to be suffering? You're the ones who are going to be cast into a war because of the neocon Zionists who won't be fighting it themselves, but rather they'll be casting you into the grinder. And I think you would find every American would stand up and say, we do not agree with militant activities and wars, whether it's against Iran, Russia, or China. We voted for Donald Trump to end it, and if he doesn't, we're going to end his presidency. And I honestly think Trump is smart enough to recognize that. He's just got some serious bad liars and people and propagandists and Zionists around him who have been fomenting this imperial juggernaut and full-spectrum dominance hegemony, which I worked on when I was in the military, and I was a contractor, and I was all over the intelligence community. So Trump needs to wake up.
All right. Well, let's hope for that. Now let's go cross over to D.C. to Johanna. Tehran has always stressed its military might is not meant to threaten regional states. It rather aims to help them provide regional security. And Iran has also offered dialogue and signing of non-aggression pacts with those states on multiple stages. Just recently, also President Zarif had a visit. Is this not the right approach?
Okay, and thank you for having me on air today.
Sure.
But I think before we go into this conversation, we have to give this context, right? So let's go back to the first sanction that was imposed on Iran by former President, in 1979, as a result of the Americans that were held hostage at the embassy, right? So historically, Iran and the United States have not had the best relationship. But we know that in 2013, under the Obama administration, for the very first time in 30 years, the two leaders spoke, and it was the highest level of conversation between the two countries in such a long time. So let's just start there and to give it context. But in terms of Iran and its military and its defense, I think that Iran, as a sovereign state, has the right to do what it needs to do to protect itself against both external and internal threats, right? But I don't think that it is something the United States needs to be concerned about, because at the end of the day, the United States has the most powerful military defense force in the world, right? But I think the countries that should be concerned are countries like Syria and Israel and such, but not necessarily the United States. And another thing that we have to look at is, I don't think there is a real plan by the current administration to invade Iran, because I think the administration has made it very clear that it wants to pull forces out of the region in general. And even more specific, the U.S. has not had military presence in Iran, and when it did have military presence was during the hostage crisis, right? And even then it wasn't really, really significant. So I don't think the U.S. has anything to worry about, but what I think the U.S. will be discussing right now is how fast are we going to respond to issues that arise out of Iran. But again, like I said earlier, Iran as a sovereign state has the right to protect itself, its borders from foreign intrusion, and also from internal threats. And also, we have to look at the Iran nuclear deal between Iran and the superpowers within the United Security Council, right? That and including Germany and the AU that the U.S. pulled out of. Some could say that this was a result of the U.S. pulling out of the Iran nuclear deal. So now Iran is in a place where it's like, what do I do to protect my interest? And we cannot neglect to discuss the international sanctions that have been imposed on Iran, how it has led to the crippling of the country's economy. But overall, I don't think that the U.S. has much to be concerned about as it relates to this new initiative by Iran and the Iranian government.
Okay. Scott, shoot.
Well, I think the biggest puppet, Barack Obama, in this notion that the JCPOA was going to be a peaceful arrangement is false. I think the Obama and the neoconservative war complex was fully planning on trying to do to Iran what they did to Libya and attempted to do to Syria. It was only going to do it much later. So the notion that this JCPOA was going to be a peace deal, I think, was a Trojan horse. I think they were planning to lie to Iran and use this JCPOA to then expand their clutches and their militarism and under Hillary Clinton, and then they would execute an attack or again what we're seeing today. Donald Trump came in under the promise that he was going to reverse all of that, and he hasn't done it sufficiently, but there's always hope. And I think some of the hope is going to be prodded by the Russians and the Iranians engaging in naval maneuvers in the Gulf of Hormuz. I think that's a very positive mutual defense collaboration, and I think China having a role in that adds to the security of China, Russia, and Iran together. And with Russia's Syria, Iran's situation, and the repelling of Turkey and the Wahhabi Saudi Arabian terrorists, which I personally know were financed by Swiss banks like Union Bank of Switzerland and the Clinton Foundation and the U.S. Department of Justice and people like Rene Alexander Acosta. All of these people in 2009 to 2014 were facilitating terrorist financing, and it's one of the greatest crimes that is now coming out that the Russia hoax was exposed as false. But Donald Trump has to really get smart and stop relying on liars, or else he's going to find himself provoked into a conflict. And that could result into a Gulf of Tonkin, that could spread into a regional war, that could destroy the base of Qatar, that could destroy American naval vessels. And suddenly you see Americans flooding for peace, and they're removing Donald Trump and they're electing a Democrat. So his political life depends on his ability to appeal and persuade the Iranians to come to the table and not necessarily cancel the deal, but to enhance it, to add his political signature to it. And that's his only option. Force is not going to work because the American people aren't going to take it.
Yeah, Scott, Iran is at the table. The U.S. left it anyway. Now, Johanna, you talked about the U.S. not being worried about this, but U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo just a couple of days ago expressed concern at a U.N. Security Council meeting regarding the fact that under the Iran nuclear deal, a U.N. arms embargo on Iran will be expiring in October 2020. And Iran has committed itself to not proliferating nukes and unconventional weapons under the JCPOA, under the deal, and this has been endorsed, that Iran has been in full compliance. So what is it that the U.S. is worried about?
Well, I just think me from, as someone who analyzes these situations, I don't think the U.S. has much to be concerned about, because at the end of the day, the U.S. has the most powerful and strongest military in the world. In fact, some have argued that Iran's new system is a bit outdated, right? But I think that we need to stay on course, because I don't think there is a real concern for the United States to go into war with Iran. And we know Iran is not a threat because Iran has a you strike first policy. So unless a country strikes Iran first, Iran will not react. Yep. So and I don't think that we have a reason to go into war with Iran, not at this moment. And then another thing we have to look at as well as we're having this discussion is that when it comes to the perception of Americans about the U.S. going into war with Iran, there was a study done by Harvard University, and it shows that over 50% of the U.S. population said that they did not want the U.S. to go into war with Iran unless Iran attacked the United States first. So my co-panelist indicated that, he discussed briefly the American public views on this issue, and based on this survey, the Americans don't want this. And second, the study shows that only 5% of Americans would want the U.S. Government to go into war with Iran.
Right. Okay, we're unfortunately running out of time. Scott, let's have your final comments briefly.
Well, Iran needs to speak directly to the American people, and I agree with my fellow panelists. The American people do not want to go to war. I'd say it's probably 75%, not 50. And Iran, through Zarif and Rouhani and Khomeini, need to make overtures to the American people through all media platforms, as well as the Europeans, and leverage that with Russia and China, and directly appeal to President Trump and his humanity and his family to divorce him from the maniacs and the political lunatics like John Bolton and Mike Pompeo, which have never served in a war and really have no sensitivity or spiritual awakening at all. Donald Trump needs to awaken to that fact that he's surrounded by dead men.
Okay, and that will come to the end of this program. Let me thank our guests. We had former U.S. Army Psychological Warfare Officer Scott Bennett out of San Francisco, and Foreign Affairs and National Security Analyst Johanna LeBlanc from Washington, D.C. Thank you for watching this debate. We'll see you next time.